Welcome into the expansive world of cis society, a space where taboos dissolve, shadows become allies, and sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality are celebrated as gateways to truth. This is Taboo Talks, a podcast where no topic is off limits, and everything is held with courage, compassion, and curiosity. Together, let's shatter the limits of what we've been taught to fear and transform it into the power to live fully, freely, and authentically.
Today, we're diving deep into the provocative underworld of shadow work, uncovering how to not just face your shadows, but to actually get turned on by them. Through a potent mix of psychology, spirituality, and taboo exploration, we're joined by one of the most revolutionary voices in this field, a true leader whose teachings have transformed both Heather and myself personally, and whose book has redefined how we alchemize our fears into our power. This is a conversation that is sure to drastically impact the way that you perceive yourself and your reality. So without further ado, we welcome Dr. Carolyn Lovewell, formerly Carolyn Elliott, onto our show. Carolyn is the author of the best-selling book on shadow integration that rocked the coaching and self-help world, Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow and Embrace Your Power, and also the cult favorite creativity guidebook, Awaken Your Genius. Dr. Lovewell is the co-founder of the Immortal College Online School for Magic, and she's also the founder of Sleepover Mystery School, the world's only publicly available in-person initiation into the Western esoteric tradition. Ooh, that sounds amazing. She co-hosts the popular occult podcast Sleepover with Carolyn and Layla. Dr. Lovewell earned her doctorate in critical and cultural studies at the University of Pittsburgh in 2012. And since then, she has helped many thousands of people all over the world to rapidly change their lives for the way better using shadow integration and applied occult philosophy. Yeah, so she is truly a pioneer in this field of shadow work, which is, for any of you that are listening that are not familiar with this term, it's really the process of acknowledging and integrating aspects of oneself that are deemed negative, undesirable, or socially unacceptable. And it's been studied by psychiatrist and psychoanalyst Carl Jung for decades. And his famous quote on this topic is, "Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate." And Carolyn truly emphasizes the importance of shadow work in activating wholeness. And she shares how the neuroscience supports that transformative power of bringing our unconscious patterns into conscious awareness. And she's really known for her bold and provocative approach, specializing people and guiding people to embrace their shadows and tap into the unseen forces that are shaping their lives. And this is why Heather and I knew we had to have her on our show, because her fearless exploration of taboo topics just perfectly aligns with our mission at Cis Society. So without further ado, what an introduction. Welcome onto our show, Carolyn. We're so honored to have you.
Oh, thank you, Avina. Thank you, Heather. So beautiful. I feel very welcome. Yes, it's all true.
Keep it coming. Yes. Keep it adding to the list.
So where shall we start? Shall I talk about what existential kink is? I'm very curious about your ladies' experience with existential kink.
Yeah, well, before maybe we even go into your book, just to kind of set it up, like, what inspired you to even explore shadow work in the first place? Because this is not really like a well-known, well-explored topic.
Indeed. Yeah, great question. So what inspired me to explore it? Well, it was a heady mix of things. So after I graduated with my doctorate, I found myself in a, there's an old joke, which is, what can you do with an English degree? And the answer is, anything you can do without one. So I had this big fancy degree from an English department, and I was homeless. I was living on a friend's couch. I was paying them like $100 a month to live on their couch. I had no money for food. I was standing in line, literally waiting for government cheese. And one day I was standing in such a line on a cold December morning. And in grad school, I had read all of this psychology. My degree is basically a degree in the humanities. We read a lot of philosophy and psychology and history. So I had read a lot of Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud, and I knew that there was such a thing as the unconscious, and it was possible for somebody to have desires that they are unconscious of. And, I was also very interested in New Thought, so like The Secret and the Law of Attraction and all of that fun stuff. And, the common notion with The Secret is that you get what you desire, you get what you focus on. And so there I was, standing in line in the freezing cold, waiting for food from the food bank because I was destitute and it was like barely scraping by in life. And, part, of course, like I felt deep shame and anxiety. I had friends that I had went to high school with who already had real jobs and they would invite me out to dinner. And it was just such an embarrassing pauper situation. And part of me was like, wow, I hate this. This is horrible. This is miserable. And then part of me was also just really curious, is there some completely unconscious part of me that actually desires this situation of scarcity and feeling ashamed and feeling lacking and get some sort of secret pleasure out of it that my conscious mind just doesn't know about? Am I actually creating this? And so I started just being gently curious about it because I really do believe I just have I believe in magic. I wanted the law of attraction stuff to be true, but there I was in such a dark situation, and no amount of positive thinking seemed to change anything. So I was like, maybe this exists in me, and maybe what needs to happen is that I simply allow myself to feel and celebrate what I'm already creating exactly as it is without shame and judgment. Because my ego had a lot of shame and judgment for the situation that I was creating. So it was a slow process, but at the time I was also involved in something called the orgasmic meditation movement, which is a partnered practice that involves it's like a very sort of pared down Zen version of Tantra, where basically a stroker strokes a woman's clitoris for 15 minutes in a very regulated fashion with like gloves and specific lube and a specific sequence. It was really big in the Bay Area in like 2013 tw through 2015. It since has exploded and there's a scandalous documentary on Netflix about it. But the organization and the teacher of the practice were questionable. But I think it's sort of like Bikram yoga, where, Bikram himself, not such a great guy, the yoga was absolutely wonderful. So likewise, the organization and the teacher of this practice had some very questionable, potentially felonious things about them. But the practice was wonderful. And I lived at the time in a group house that was dedicated to this practice. So I was having my clitoris stroked twice a day. It was quite wonderful, like clockwork, no strings attached.
Again.
And what was, there was some common, there was some sort of common wisdom in the orgasmic meditation movement connected to the way that, because after the meditation, the stroker and the strokee would exchange notes. So basically, the stroker would say, there was a moment when I felt this resonance between my finger and your clitoris, and it was like my finger was being magnetized to a specific spot. And then as a strokee, I would hear that and I would think, did I feel a similar moment? And, if I did, I would talk about it. And basically, this folk wisdom grew up that there's the stroker's finger would be magnetized to a place on the clitoris that would be the most resonant spot. And sometimes the woman being stroked would find that very pleasurable, and sometimes she would not. And really, what it had to do with was about the range of sensation that the strokee, the woman, could consciously accept as good. Because it's so. And the invitation in the practice was to gradually, see if you could relax and surrender and expand into allowing a larger range of sensation to bring you pleasure. And I found through years of doing this practice that that was indeed possible for me, that what started out as, a stroker would be stroking on a resonant spot. And at first I would hate it. I'd be like, and you could give ask for changes in the stroke. So I would immediately ask for a change in the stroke. I would immediately, want it to be different. But over time, the invitation to just see what you can surrender into, see if you can expand your orgasmic capacity. I discovered, that the stroker could be on the same resonance spot, and indeed, I could surrender deeper, and what was previously an unpleasant sensation could become an enormously orgasmic, amazing sensation. So I knew that from firsthand experience in my body. And this, I've gradually started to ponder. I was like, what if life is always giving me that resonant stroke? Basically, what if God is always stroking me in that most resonant magnetic place? And what if sometimes I'm able to let myself enjoy it, but sometimes I'm not surrendered enough to let myself enjoy it? And I'm like, no, God, change the stroke. I don't like it. And so I just started experimenting with this idea of, I'm being stroked by life in such a way that my bank account is empty. I don't seem to have any job prospects. I'm like out here hustling on the mean streets of Pittsburgh. Is maybe there's something enjoyable about this? And can I just expand with great love, great permission? Can I just set aside my shame and my judgment? And trust that, some part of me is thrilled by this. And indeed, I found that when I said to myself, I was doing the work of Byron Katie one day, and the work of Byron Katie involves asking yourself questions, and then turning around your initial judgments into the opposites. So I was very judgmental. I was trying to get clients as a creativity coach at the time. And I knew coaches through my connections in California with the orgasmic meditation movement who were earning like $1,000 an hour with their clients. And this like blew my mind. This was like so far outside the range of my little Pittsburgh blue collar spectrum of experience. So I had a judgment, which was people should want to pay me $1,000 an hour for coaching. And I questioned the statement with the Byron Katie questions and I turned it around. And you're supposed to turn around to self, opposite, and others. So I should want to pay somebody else $1,000 an hour for coaching. Nobody should ever want to pay me anything for coaching. And as I said that to myself, I felt this exquisite zing throughout my body, like I was so turned on. And I knew that the truth is sensational, that the fact that I felt that zing meant that there truly that my body was turned on by this idea of being nobody ever wanting to pay me anything. Despite my conscious mind's idea that, fuck yeah, they should pay me $10,000 an hour, right? It's like, there was a misalignment there. My body was saying yes. And so obviously, I was like, well, obviously, this is why nobody's paying me anything because I'm super turned on by them not paying me. And there's a very direct correlation between a person's turn on and what they attract in their lives. So I didn't know how to change this turn on. I mean, I really wanted to. I was like, how do I get turned on by $10 million? I didn't know. But I was like, all I know is I can at least allow myself to be as turned on as I am by not being paid anything. So I would set aside time each day, and just like the orgasmic meditation practice was 15 minutes long, I would just spend, I would set a timer and I would just spend 15 minutes or 20 minutes saying, all right, let's just set aside all of my judgments about this and let's just feel the pleasure that's already here. Let's allow it. Oh, this is my daughter, Lulu. Honey, mommy's doing an interview. You escaped up here. Okay.
Hi, escapee.
Okay, Janelle, mommy's going to have to do this with you in a minute, in a little bit. Right? Where's grandma? Grandma! Go see grandma. Close the door, please.
Have a fugitive on the
So, where was I? All right. Okay. I was letting, I could find, I found that with practice, day by day, I could give myself more and more permission and more approval. to get on the side of this unconscious part of me, this previously unconscious part of me that just, oh my God, just loved this scarcity, loved humiliation, loved anxiety, loved having every month be like playing a dice game of survival. Just thought it was the most romantic, thrilling, desirable thing in the world. And you know, this practice, when I talk about it, I think maybe what I don't emphasize enough is that existential kink practice involves going a little bit insane. You have to go a little bit genuinely, truly insane and completely outside the bounds of what is comprehensible in order to actually get off on what you've previously hated. So I did that. I allowed myself to go a little bit insane, and you know, I would say to myself things like, it doesn't matter if anybody else ever understands this or ever approves of it. It doesn't need to make sense to anybody else. I'm just going to completely enjoy being broke as much as I enjoy it without any shame. And anyways, so I found that with practice, I could do that. And to the point that I could go into it and have an utterly like full body orgasm, just thinking about all the bills that I had no idea how I was going to pay, like the student loan debt and the amazing credit card. It's just like, wow. And what happened, and what I think is very important to emphasize with shadow work, you know, I like to say that all shadow work is God work. You know, shadow work is theurgy. Theurgy means God work in Greek. Is that I really got in touch. I started to get in touch with my divine self, with my soul. And what I've learned about the soul, and I feel like there's many, many words of wisdom from many traditions that back this up, is that the soul incarnates because it desires the whole range of human experience, not just, you know, the good stuff that my ego likes. Like it also wants to experience failure and loss and humiliation and death and sickness and all of these things. So, anyways, I was getting on the side of my soul, really enjoying it, and my identity changed. So, I stopped seeing myself as this pathetic, miserable, shameful, lacking little person who just was being rejected by the world and cruel fate. And instead, I started seeing myself as this amazingly fulfilled person, even though my desires were weird and nobody else could possibly agree with them or understand them. So, I thought, I realized that I was getting exactly and precisely what my body really was delighted by. So I started living in that delight. And so, in a way, existential kink is completely aligned with more, you know, you could say conventional law of attraction teachings, and that, you know, I found my delight, but it turns out my delight didn't come from, you know, ignoring or not paying attention to the darker parts of my life. It came from deeply, insanely, orgasmically embracing them. And I like to mention this because I think, you know, millennials are in the Pluto and Scorpio generation, and a lot of those law of attraction teachings were like written and spoken about by baby boomers who had Pluto and Leo. And Pluto and Leo is very like, look on the sunny side of life. You know, like if you listen to an Abraham Hicks track, it'll be like, just don't pay attention to all the failure and illness and misery in the world. Only think about your happy place. Like, anyways, I could never do it. I was never able to succeed at it. But I have actually been able to succeed at the law of attraction by using this existential kink approach of just finding my insane orgasmic pleasure in very dark things. And if anybody, you know, this, for anybody, I really like to recommend the best introduction to existential kink. Obviously, my book, Yay, and also the 1990s Addams Family movies. Like, Morticia Addams is the world expert on existential kink. And Morticia Addams, if you think about it for a second, one day I asked myself, is there any woman in all of film or novel or TVs and any TV shows, any woman who is, you know, completely fulfilled, who has, you know, all of the money that she wants, she has a wonderful family life, she has a passionate relationship, she has all of the respect of her community, she has exactly the house and the garden that she wants. If you really think about it, and I dare anybody, you can try me on this. The only woman who matches that description of having everything she wants is Morticia Adams. She is living a completely fulfilled life, and she's doing it through existential kink. She is able to get off on absolutely anything. People put her on a torture wheel, and she is fucking so happy about it. And like, that's true unconditional love. That's really, at the end of the movie, if anybody remembers, she's being tortured by the bad guys. Who's this, the bad guy is this sort of evil con woman doctor who has like tried to steal all of her family's money. And she's talking to her and she's like, Dr. Pinderschloss, you're so bitter. You're vindictive. You're manipulative. We could have been best friends. Like, she just has total approval of this woman. And the only thing she doesn't approve, the only thing that she, anyways, she points out is like, you don't seem to enjoy your evil as much as I enjoy your evil. And anyways, so I've just been monologuing for a while, so I'll zip it, but that's my little intro to existential kink.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was so juicy. Thank you for sharing. I'm seeing that. I mean, all these different elements of your life, different things that you've studied, all kind of culminated into what is now your life's work. And yeah, I find that really, really beautiful and inspirational that like at the time we're in like the shit, we're moving through something and we don't actually know where it's taking us. And then at one point everything just kind of starts to merge together and make sense. And yeah, your work is potent, babe. It's I'm really grateful for it. I tried something was coming through when you were sharing, and it was the common spiritual practice of positive affirmations, which I did for 10 years, and literally nothing changed my life. And one point I was meditating, and it was like, why are you doing this to yourself? Like, why are you literally resisting what is? Like, is there something, is there maybe another layer of truth that's a bit lower on the spectrum that you can like level up with? Like, if you desire to get to like, I am beautiful. If I look in the mirror and I see myself and I think I am, putrid, like going straight from that to I'm beautiful is just like, it's not feasible. It's not even like in the realm of possibility. And so something that your work has given me is this like, is this easing into embracing and accepting all elements and pieces of myself. And it's been badass. If I may share a story, I was just sharing it with Elfina before we hopped on. And then I have some questions for you. But I was in a self-pleasure practice this morning and feeling like a bunch of density move through my body. And I was like, okay, I'm going to drop in and get curious. I'm like, what is this? And immediately it was like, I am shame. And I was like, all right, shame, let's go in. Like, I'm bringing you down to the genitals as you describe in your practice. It's like taking any sort of non-desirable and bringing it down to the base, to the root. And as soon as I brought it down there, I was like, okay, do you have a message for me? Like, why are you here? And it was like, I love you. And I immediately started crying and I was like, you love me. And in that moment, there was this really beautiful revelation that was like, I've been treating shame like shit. I've been like, shame is bad. Shame, I don't want it. I don't want you here. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to feel you. And through all of that, shame has unconditionally loved me. And in that space, it was like, shame was like, don't you see that like I'm here to bring you back to love? And through everything, I've always loved you. I will always love you. And it just started to dissolve. And then I had a really incredible orgasm. So just today, I want to thank you for existing and supporting me. And ultimately, there was a point in the meditation or in my self-pleasure meditation that connected to collective shame. Because like typically I'll zoom into my personal experience and then it starts to broaden the more deeper you dive into your divinity and you connect to God. And then I was just moving collective shame through my body, through my orgasm, which was just such a treat and an honor to serve in that way.
Yes, thank you for doing that. That's precisely what it takes. Witches transmuting personal and collective shame. That's how we're gonna get through this birth portal that we're in.
It's sure we are. We are definitely in a birth portal. Age of Aquarius is upon us. I think, I mean, I shared a personal story of mine, but I'm an example kink and I'm a story kink, and I would love to know if there is a particular moment or breakthrough story that you've experienced from a student or a reader that really stands out to you that just was wow.
Oh my goodness. Oh my, it's one of these things where I'm suffering from an embarrassment of riches because people have sent me their stories, so I've ex encountered so many thousands over the years. Let me try to dial in. I think one of my favorites is my dear friend Layla, who does my podcast with me, who teaches in the Immortal College and Sleepover Mystery School, and she's now like one of the head teachers of the Existential Kink Coach Training Program because we train existential kink coaches, and she was one of the first people that I trained in the process. And I saw Layla go from this amazing, this huge transformational arc from being this like kind of mousy looking Wisconsin rural school teacher who only dressed in like brown sweaters to being this like incredible like glamazon, just this like fantastic creature of tremendous beauty and light and whore of Babylon power. And Layla, part of Layla's big story arc was she was always, people sort of how do I say? Whenever she would start doing things in her hometown, like offering spiritual workshops or anything, people would call her a charlatan and a hustler and, insinuate how evil she was for, wanting to charge money for anything, which I encounter too. And a lot of people, especially in small towns, I think encounter because there's this culture of like, spirituality can't be associated with money. And anyways, she had this deep transformation where she just completely owned and embraced the hustler and the charlatan and the con woman archetype to the point that nobody could use it to shame her. And now she's the best saleswoman on my team. She's this luminous force. She has everything she ever wanted. She has, a new house and hot husband and baby, and she's not in Wisconsin anymore. Anyways, that's one of the transformations that I've seen. Trying to think some more transformations. I mean, what is crazy to me is the amount of stories that people have. Oh, wait, I have one, I have one, I have one. This is a good one. This is a precise one. That was a larger story arc. This is more precise. I read a story recently, somebody sent me, about how they live in an apartment building, this woman, and she does her laundry in the laundry apartment building. And she was encountering some man left his like stinky, unwashed underwear in the apartment laundry area, and she would usually this would happen regularly, and she would get filled with rage, like, why do I have to deal with this? These horrible, evil, tyrannical men and the patriarchy oppressing me with their disgusting underwear. Why am I in this apartment? My life sucks. All of these stories, which you can totally identify. That sounds like a place my mind would totally go at a certain point. But she's in the Existential Kink Coach Training Program, and she gave herself permission to go a little bit insane. And she just took this underwear and she inhaled.
I knew you were going to say this. I was like, she smelled the underwear. She did it. I felt it. I knew it.
She said that she like fell down on the laundry room floor and started having these like crazy primal orgasms, like Holy Spirit twitching, moving through her. And I was like, that's it. That's inspirational. That's further than I've ever gone with the
She is committed.
Yes.
And on the flip side of all of these stories, like your story, her story, can you go a little bit more into why getting turned on by our desires actually is so powerful for personal growth? And like, what happens on the other side of smelling the underwear, or the other side of being turned on by your poverty and humiliation.
Yeah. What happens is transformation. So, you know, there's that saying that's so true. What we resist persists. And, you know, Carl Jung talked about in order for something to be conscious, it has to be associated with the ego mind. It has to be in a network of connection to other memories. It has to be something that we experience as willed and deliberate. So like, I will myself to pick up my hot chocolate mug. And my conscious ego thinks, I want hot chocolate. I'm gonna drink some. I enjoy this, right? So I'm consciously drinking and enjoying my hot chocolate. And that's something that we would say is, how do I say, syntronic? No, sorry, wrong word. It's sympathetic to my existing ego preferences. The thing about shadow desires, about these unconscious, you know, turn-ons, which every human being has, by the way, because I didn't emphasize enough, is not every human being has these dark, weird attractions to unpleasant things, and you know that you have the attraction to it if it repeatedly occurs. So, how do I say? So, when it's unconscious, the ego is not consciously willing it. So it just seems to be happening, right? It seems like cruel fate is doing this to me. Cruel fate is keeping me poor. Cruel fate keeps me encountering this man's disgusting underwear. Cruel fate keeps me in this situation. And the transition, the transformation comes when we decide to experience it as something I actively choose and will and desire. So I actively choose and will and desire my poverty. And I begin to associate that with, I integrate that into my actual ego. So the weird thing is, and it gets tricky because sometimes people are like, they try to do existential kink ironically, right? Like, oh, I must really love this poverty. Wow, I love it so much. And you know, that doesn't do it. Because it's an actual transformation in identity. You have to realize that actually who you really are is the person who loves the poverty. And that's going to be a humbling realization because that's not who you think you are. So there's a humbling and there's usually, you know, there's a little ego death in it. So like the woman who sniffed the nasty underwear has my admiration forever because what an ego death. Like she was like, no, actually I do. I am the one who desires this underwear. And she transformed. She consciously transformed into who she truly already was. And that's the thing. It takes courage. It takes psychedelic, crazy level ego surrender. You have to die to who you thought you were to become who you truly are. And that's the thing. It's like everybody is a master of unconditional love. Everybody is an absolute master of cherishing the wholeness of life. We just have to allow ourselves to realize that. So, so the change, so there's a change in identity that happens when we consciously, willingly associate with the thing that we're averse to. And that change in identity is inevitably an expansion. It's inevitably an opening up into like the wider divine part of us. And energy is released, creative energy is released, that previously all of that creative energy was being used to keep myself in denial about what an exquisite, insane, kinky lover of life I truly am. You know, so if you listen to like one of my favorite, I really love Jesus, I'm just a super Jesus freak, and I was listening to the Sermon on the Mount today, and in the Sermon on the Mount, he's like, you know, if somebody hits you, turn the other cheek. If somebody steals from you, give them more. Be like, here, have more. And what he's doing in that is he's giving instructions in this practice. It's like, if you want to be in touch with your divine power, willingly go along with whatever the fuck is happening, because that's how you gain more power. Those aren't moral instructions. Those are like very precise, practical, magical, initiatory, alchemical instructions. for agreeing to and like going with whatever process is already happening, because that's how the unconscious becomes conscious, and that's how the alchemical marriage happens that that brings us into our creativity, our magnetism, our power. So what we see again and again in the Immortal College, in the coaching programs, in the Mystery School, people's lives just light up the more they sink into this practice, and the more they give themselves the permission and widen that window of enjoyment. We call it a havingness level, which is basically how much sensational experience can you allow yourself to have with deep love and approval. So what tends to happen in people's lives is that they go from this sort of like cramped, like rather miserable condition, which sadly is very, very common in this world, right? And you start experience they start experiencing much more amazing positive synchronicities in their lives. And I love that because the way that I understand it is that magic is active participation in synchronicity. Synchronicities are patterns of events with a shared resonance of meaning. So internal and external events with a shared resonance of meaning. And the whole world runs on synchronicity. And when somebody is giving to their experience the meaning of, this is horrible, I hate this, I'm a victim of this, this is just happening to me, then they will keep on having experiences. They will synchronously have more experiences with that same shared resonance of meaning. And when we give the meaning to our experience of, this is so amazing, I created this, I love my insane freak self, wow, great, yay, then we start having synchronous experiences of that. So life becomes very orgasmically magical. And let's see, what else do I have to say about that? That's what I'll say for now. I keep
Yeah,
talking.
that's like just to finish that thought, like you going from, sharing these thoughts to yourself of, okay, I'm turned on by my poverty, all these things. And then when did that actually translate into you getting a job, booking clients, like after you started practicing that, just to like follow through all the
Oh.
way? 'Cause I'm really curious to hear like how applying that actually did transform your life. Yeah,
Marvelous
tell us.
question. So the answer is that it was a matter of weeks. The get off for that first one was really quick for me. I call it beginner's luck. Usually the first thing that people try getting off on, they really pop off. Other than the practice can slow down somewhat. But it happened, the transformation happened for me in a matter of weeks. And then it was about 2 months that between I went from making about $1,500 a month at the time to making $10,000 a month. And all it was, and then I moved to Bali. I was like, see ya, suckers. I'm getting off of this couch. I'm moving to Bali. So like it was and it wasn't, it was like, how do I say this? Like I said, my creativity was released and my identity was changed. And it was as if these blinders had been removed from me. Because all I did was follow some very simple, common advice on the internet, which is if you're a coach and you want to make money, get an email list and make an offer to your email list for a course. And that was all I did. But and that advice, it wasn't as if that advice never existed, or if I was illiterate and incapable of reading that simple advice. It was that that advice had never been able to penetrate my blinders and my little, weird scarcity world. Even as I was living in my weird scarcity world, I already had all that I needed to create that bounty in my life. It was like, it's hard to explain because it happened so fast. It was like a light bulb just went off in my being. And I was like, I'm a wonderful, fulfilled person who can have an email list and offer a course. So I offered a course on writing. I've been trained as an English teacher. I know how to teach people how to write. And anyways, I was immediately making $10,000 a month and living in Bali. And then I traveled around Europe. And then I Now I'm a multimillionaire and have everything that I want. So it's just, it's really, it's, and I'm sure, there's deeper levels. Like there's always levels that I discover, like, oh, there's more to heal, there's more to integrate. That's a lifelong process. But it's certainly also true that, like, existential kink is an incredibly rapid approach to shadow integration. And there's other approaches to shadow integration that are super important and super valuable. Like Carl Jung mainly focused on dream work. And I do a lot of dream work in my courses today with people. But dream work can take quite a long time. It can take at least usually a few years of paying attention to one's dreams to really start to understand patterns and start to understand interpretation. Whereas existential kink can, in a few weeks, you can completely change your life.
Ooh. Yeah, you can. It's just so incredible. Like this work, you, what you're doing. And when I first came across it, you hear, I live in kind of like what people would call like a conscious spiritual community. I'm in Tulum, and there's just so much circulating. There's
To Tulum soon. Sorry,
Are
Heather.
you?
I should visit you when I'm in Tulum. I'm going to be in Tulum, and I have a house in Tulum. I'll be there in January. Anyways, we'll talk.
This is the magic of the work. I'm now celebrating the synchronicities of this now moment. So thank you, existential kink. Yeah, where was I? I lost my train of thought.
You live in a spiritual community in
Oh
Tulum. Yeah, nice to
yeah. There,
you.
it's saturated with like, a lot of incredible things, but and I'm consistently receiving information about different spiritual practices and different things to do in plant medicine ceremonies. And I went over a sister's place for a workshop. And when I was leaving, I was like, I intuitively just asked her, I was like, hey, are you reading like a book right now that you sh like that you feel called to share with me? And she was like, oh my God, existential kink. And I was like, I'm on my way out. So it was a really quick exchange. And I was like, what is it? And she was like, well, you get turned on by your shadows and by your darkness. And it just like hit me, like through all of the noise and everything that I was receiving. I just fucking got it. And I started reading it, I think that night. I was like, I gotta go into this. And it's been a part of my life and my work ever since. And definitely feel like your work has inspired pieces of what we're building and what we're doing. So yeah, I feel in deep gratitude to you and all of the individual pieces that you've connected that have now created the you that is you and the work that you do. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to hear this, and thank you so much for, doing the alchemical work that you ladies are doing, because that's really what I'm interested in. I want to see, and I think we are seeing is a complete revival of alchemical literacy and mystery tradition. And I really think that that's what the world needs, and that's what they're hungry for. And we need all different sorts of approaches and all different sorts of teachers. And we need to get this done. Move on to the next level.
Yeah, let's level up. It's a video game, right?
Let's level down, right? So
That's
we can level
exactly
down to
that
level up
integrate
all the
incarnate.
levels.
Incarnate.
Yeah, my first experience practicing existential kink, it was something I was really resisting, something I was really scared of. And I just fully let myself drop into it, be turned on by it. And then it happened, like almost the exact visualization happened a week later. And had I not practiced existential kink, I think I would have met that with so much more resistance and fear. I would have kind of blocked it. I wouldn't, but because I had visualized it and already told my nervous system it was safe and pleasurable, I was able to really surrender, open up, and receive that experience in full. And it was such a beautiful, transformative, expansive experience for me. And so, yeah, I just want to really thank you that this work is extremely potent for anyone listening. Like, I really highly recommend getting Carolyn's book. You can listen to it on audiobook because the way you narrate is just so great. I love hearing your voice and speaking into it. And there's so many practices. Maybe like we only have less than 10 minutes, but maybe we could just leave the listeners with like your most potent favorite practice from the book that they can implement into their lives if they want to start doing this type of work.
Great, great. I think a wonderful place for people to start. So there is the existential kink meditation itself, which is they can get the full details of in the book. It's fairly involved. But a great warm-up for existential kink is the practice I call deepest fear inventory. And it's
Oh, I did that one. I did that one.
yeah, isn't
Good
that
favorite.
great?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's this Marianne Williamson quote, you know, our deepest fear is not that we are powerless, but that we are powerful beyond measure. So deepest fear inventory is, you know, you write at the top of the sheet of paper something along the lines of whatever I'm usually, how do I say it? So like right now, a deepest fear inventory thing that I'm working with is so I've been at an audience of about like my email list has been about 60,000 people for a while. And I want to get beyond, I want to get to 10 million people, right? But clearly some part of me doesn't. So I write at the top of the sheet of paper, I absolutely refuse to have 10 million people on my email list because I have deep fear that I. And then I write everything associated with it. So because I have deep fear that I can't handle that much attention, because I have deep fear that I will get canceled again, because I have deep fear that I don't deserve it, because I have deep fear, you know, and just as fast as possible, write out at least 20 emotions, fears connected to that. And a thing I like to tell people to do is if something comes up that has to do with what another person might do, I always write it in terms of because I'm unwilling to feel. So if something comes up of like, you know, because I have deep fear that other people will think that I'm wrong and evil and stupid, I would write, because I have deep fear that I am unwilling to feel that other people experience me as wrong and stupid. Because it's important to keep deepest fear inventory about, you know, me and what I'm willing to feel. And then at the end, I write a simple prayer. It's inspired from the 12-step traditions. It's, you know, dear God, take my will in my life, you know, remove these fears, show me how to live, give me knowledge of your will for me, that sort of thing. And then what one does with the deepest fear inventory is reads it out loud to a friend. And that's very important to have another human consciousness listen to the deepest fear inventory because there's power in human consciousness. You know, Jesus said, wherever two or more of you are gathered in my name, there I will be also. And the deepest fear inventory works sort of like stripping paint in that what happens is you start to get very bored of your fears. So it generally takes about 2 weeks of writing deepest fear inventory on the same subject every day to get completely bored to the level that, you know, some fears drop off. And so I highly recommend that practice because, you know, existential kink, I think, takes a certain amount of free floating good humor in the body, and free floating good feelings are necessary to alchemize some of the scarier stuff. Whereas deepest fear inventory can be done, whatever state of mind you're in, whatever state of feeling that you're in, and is a good way to start to warm up and become aware of like, oh, really, I don't want 10 million people on my email list because I have all of these things that I'm concerned about that would happen if I did. And so it starts to create a larger level of honesty and a larger level of excavation. So I think that's a great practice to start with.
Yeah, it was so powerful. I did that for a few weeks with my friend, and it was all around money. Like, I deeply fear and resent having received $100,000. And that's like been my biggest shadow work right now. It's like, why am I not attuning to the money that I know that I want? And it was so interesting because number one, it's actually hard to come up with 20 fears every single time. And number two, there are so many fears that I never even realized that were under there. Like fear that I'm going to be perceived differently by my peers, or fear that I'm like going to mismanage the money, or fear that I'm going to lose my freedom and my time. Like, that was a really big one. And my life's going to change forever and be stressful and whatever. And then it's so funny because then over time, as you say these things out loud to yourself and to your friend, a lot of the fears start to lose their grip on you. And you're like, wait, that's not even true anymore. Like, and once you're speaking it, maybe the first week you speak it and it feels scary, but then the second week, the third week, you're like, this actually doesn't feel scary anymore, and it's not my truth. And then the things just start to fall
Absolutely.
away until you've kind of de-armored this fear. But it's so interesting because, yeah, it's really easy to play victim. It's so easy to play victim than to take responsibility. And I think if I would end the conversation with one like nail in the Jesus's in the cross, it's yeah, that it's time for us to take ownership and see that we are the creators of our reality, and every single thing in our reality is because it's there because we've created it. And we are either consciously or unconsciously consenting to that. And so it's really time to stop pointing the blame around us at others and really start to look inward and see what part of me is creating this. And if I want something different, how can I take responsibility for that?
Absolutely. So well said. Thank you, Alfina.
And thank you. Thank you for inspiring this conversation. And I just want to give you, you know, we're wrapping up on time, but even just a minute to share with our listeners how they can work with you, connect with all the offerings that you have.
Yes, absolutely. So the best thing for them to do is go to theimmortalcollege.com, and there's little forms there to subscribe to our email list. Also on my website, carolynlovewell.com. But also on the Immortal College site, they can see all of our offerings. Getting on the email list is the best thing, because that way they find out about courses and the classes and the next time we offer Sleepover Mystery School. They should definitely check out the Sleepover podcast, where folks can hear me talk, me and Layla talk all the live long day about existential kink and super weird magic and Carl Jung and Aleister Crowley and Jesus. Those are like our favorite things to talk about. And yeah, the next version, next round of the Mystery School will be in, not this year, but next year in 2026. So we, that's a 9-month program with 4 in-person ritual meetings. It's a deeply astounding initiation program. And it's sort of like a combination between an ancient mystery school and a teenage naughty slumber party. Well, that's factually exactly what it is.
So wow, cool.
And we might be doing a Babylon, a Whore of Babylon magical retreat weekend in the spring, since we're not doing mystery school this year. And so definitely join the email list and listen to the podcast. And I am on X at Carolyn Lovewell. Or is it Promethea? Anyways, Promethea77, Dr. Carolyn Lovewell on X. I have an Instagram account where they can find lots of my posts, but I'm not so active on Instagram these days. That's also at Carolyn Lovewell. We have a main offering, a course on Saturn magic, productivity, and organization, which will be offered in January on the list. And in February, we'll be offering Electric Yes, which is our general school for magic, where we have a lot of instruction on theurgy and a lot of coaching available. So I could go on and on, but I'll zip it. Wow.
You're so multifaceted. You're so talented, so creative, a creative genius, clearly. So many offerings, beautiful. I'm so interested in that mystery school initiation. Wow. That was actually an idea Heather and I have had for our company. So it's really cool to see someone doing that in real life. I'm super inspired. And yeah, thank you so much for being on the show, Carolyn, with us. I know that you're busy and just taking time out of your life to be here with us. It just really means so much to us and our audience. And yeah, thank you, every one of you who are watching this show, watching Taboo Talks, who have been here with us. We wouldn't be here without each and every one of you. So please, like, make sure to like this episode, subscribe to our channel for more juicy conversations like this, check out Carolyn's work, sign up for her programs that resonate with you. Please grab a copy of her book, seriously, and share this episode, share this show with friends who you think would really benefit from this, which I feel like is probably everyone, to be honest.
Thank you for tuning into Taboo Talks, where some truths need to be spoken and some silences need to be broken. Each week, we come together with diverse minds to explore and integrate the dance between shadow and light. Don't miss a moment. Follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Search Cis Society Taboo Talks, and if something here moved you, please share it. These conversations are so important and truly support the expansion of our mission. And if you want to go deeper, DM us on Instagram at Cis Society World to join our private WhatsApp community, a space where your voice is not just heard, but celebrated. Until next time, stay curious, stay open, and remember, the only thing taboo is not talking about it.